Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
You're listening to Crossover here on WRTI. Our next guest is saxophonist Jane Bennett. Hello.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Jane. Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you.
Yeah, good to speak to you, too.
This album, Radio
Guantanamo,
is just amazing.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it.
It's really wonderful. I have a quote, though, that somebody said, there'll never be a typical Jane Bennett album. And you know that's absolutely true, because all of your albums are very, very different.
Well, that's what we try to do. We, you know, you don't want to repeat yourself. It's, you know, as somebody once said, you don't want to keep writing the same novel over and over again. And that's part of the challenge always for us, is to, you know, create a new thing for ourselves. And it's kind of it's what sort of motivates us in discovering new things, new elements that we
new
can
ways of doing it.
Engage
in
our work.
Yeah, but you're always, of course, the Latin beat is there, and that's really,
yeah, well,
incredible.
That's what I love. I always kind of gravitated. I mean, I played piano, classical piano for years, and it was always the Latin American composers, or even some of the American composers that sort of integrated rhythms into the music that I always enjoyed them most. So
well,
must have been under my skin.
You are, I mean, a completely rounded musical human being. I mean, you're a singer, you're a saxophonist, a flutist. You also, as you say, you played piano. And I mean, where is the not where does your strength lie, but how would you identify yourself in terms of what is the first on the list there?
Well, I guess in some ways, you know, the saxophone and flute are my primary, you know, really the instruments that I really work at and, you know, try every day to sort of build my technique or technique up, or either keep my technique up there and try not to let what I've got together slip. But I would say, I think my real talent kind of lies in pooling the artists that I choose to work with. I feel like I have really good taste in who I choose to work with.
Yeah.
And I have good instincts in the people that help, you know, me develop the music that I'm trying to develop. Like, from the very beginning, when I started playing jazz, I was inspired by the late, great Don Pullen and the late, great Dewey Redman. These were musicians that were really, for me, you know, they were my mentors, my musical heroes. Steve Lacy would also be one, too. And I had a chance, you know, to play with them and record with them and do some touring with them. And they, you know, sort of elevated my musical level up by, you know, trying to sort of reach, you know, where they were playing at, and sometimes succeeding, sometimes not, but still it was, you know, it was, inspiring to play along, you know, with these great musicians. And so from the very beginning, I was always reaching out to find, artists that would sort of, you know, help push me, and sort of open my eyes up and teach me, you know, teach me the music that, you know, the area that they were coming from.
But I really think what you have, and what so many of the really great jazz artists have, is that something that goes far beyond that. The ability certainly to improvise and to feel on a certain level, something that you really can't get from conservatory, as
well,
it were.
It's true. I mean, hopefully hopefully you can have a happy medium. That's what I sort of wish and long for, that, you know, between the two worlds both come together. I mean, I think, you know, so much of, I mean, it sounds corny, but so much of your life experience, you know, really comes
yes.
out in your,
no,
in your work. And it's always been very important to me. I think that's why I took such a shift from classical music to jazz, was, you know, experiencing people like seeing Charles Mingus and Ross on Roland Kirk, and seeing that they were, not only were they great musicians, but they seemed to be great. They seemed to be great communicators, you know, on the bandstand with their musicians.
Well, it's very personal. It's also
yeah,
a personal
and even yeah. if you got a chance to speak to some of these people, they were extremely communicative too, just as social, human beings. They communicated. They spoke what they thought. I mean, I'm not totally clear about this, but you know, they had personality.
Yes,
and they,
yes, yes.
They weren't afraid to show their personalities in their music. And
now,
and also,
when did you make that change from classical? I mean, what were you doing
really
that was classical?
Well, it was really from Mingus. You know, I was playing classical piano. I guess I was about 18-ish, and I was having a lot of tendonitis problems because of various things that were happening at the time. And mm-hmm. I went to San Francisco with my cousin, and I had heard Mingus before in Toronto at the Colonial Tavern, which was a real jazz spot. And mm-hmm. I heard a lot of great musicians pass through there. But, you know, they were one-offs. It would be like a matinee concert of Mingus. But when I got to San Francisco, it was, you know, the doctor suggested it was good for me to just get away from the piano and the temptation of playing and go somewhere warm, as our Februarys in Toronto are pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to San Francisco. I was, I guess, there about 3 weeks a month, and spent a lot of time at Keystone Corners, and happened to hear Mingus. And went night after night. I think I went all 5 nights of the performance there, and that was really pivotal. Like when I came back from that trip, I had thought when I saw the group that they were all classical musicians, but playing this like just incredibly intense, marvelous music. But it was classical music, but it was different.
Mm-hmm.
I started to really get an idea that I started to think about jazz, and that it was like, of course, you needed great technique to play, but you needed all this other information. And I pretty rapidly enrolled it's funny, I finished up my piano studies that year, but I did my grade 10 piano because I felt I needed to really sort of close the book on some things. And one day when I was coming home, I saw this building. I took a different way going back to my house, and there was a school that had opened up in a house called the New School of Music, and they were offering classes in improvising and all the instruments and jazz workshops. And I immediately walked in, and I was really impressed, and I enrolled in about 2 of the classes, and then gradually enrolled in a few more. And I started to meet other people that were, you know, studying, wanting to learn about jazz and stuff, and that was really it.
But I think it's interesting that certainly for our listeners, to know that, you know, jazz, you don't just sit down and say, I think I'm going to do this. I mean, there certainly is a lot of learning there in terms of technique, not only technique, but I think harmony and, you know, understanding.
Oh, no, it's incredible. And, you know, you meet so many of the great musicians. There's so many greats out there, and even some of the younger great musicians, like, you know, oh gosh, you know, the Joshua Redmans and the Rini Rosnes and
yes.
All these people, they'll say to you, you know, they still feel like they're at the tip of the iceberg. There's still so much more to learn. There's so much music out there, not only to learn about jazz, but, you know, all the modern classical music that's being developed, and even going back into, you know, Béla Bartók, and all of this music is all, there's so much.
Well, I think the composers themselves realized, of course, the whole 20th century is filled with composers who are exploring, you know, to expand the boundaries, certainly in classical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe improvisational jazz and contemporary jazz is coming closer to contemporary classical music, because I think that the strictures are not the same as they were 200 years ago, you know.
No,
so,
I mean, I think in some ways a lot of these classical composers, they were hearing, you know, they were hearing this music, and it's almost like they're notating what jazz improvisers do, are trained to do, almost, you know. We don't put it on a page, but we create, you know. And when you hear some of this beautiful music, like you're talking about Bartok, et cetera,
well, Stravinsky,
but often
and
this
the
music sounds, it almost sounds jazz.
Yes, well, it was. They were already using the choral harmonies, I think, in the early 20th century. What I wanted to ask you also, Jane, though, was you did write, you had a rather, I would say, in relation to your other albums, an offbeat album, The Red Dragonfly, which was really very, very impressive. I was very impressed with that. And, of course, the use of the string quartet and so on. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, it's interesting because right now we're speaking from, I'm working on a similar type of record, but I'm really, really proud of that record. I'm not happy the way it was distributed, and that's probably one of the age, you know, you're going to hear that from so many artists that they're not happy to see, you know, how they, something was promoted. But that record came about because I wanted to do, often in the recordings that we've done, I don't want to say they jumped all over the map, but they often, because they've included, like, working within specific areas of Cuba. For example, Alma de Santiago, we were in the city of Santiago de Cuba, and we were working with many of the ingredients, the music of that area, which is very, very different from Havana. You have a song, and you have the music for Carnival, the comparsa.
Yes,
so that record, we showed a lot of different sides of the musical life there. And in this record, in Red Dragonfly, I wanted to have a record that sort of stuck to not a theme, but it had one voice sort of flowing through the whole recording, and that's decided to just do the whole recording on soprano saxophone. Over the years, I had collected songs in my head that I really loved, that someday I would wanted to record and do in a certain way. But how am I going to kind of pull them all together? And then with my husband, who's producer and trumpet player, Larry Kramer, we thought, well, you know, this would be amazing to do something with a string quartet. Maybe that will be what will bind, you know, sort of all the tunes together. And I had met Christine Flight, who's the a member of the Penderecki string quartet many years ago, kept her card, and when the time came, I gave her a call and said, would you be interested in doing this new project with me? And they were pretty gung-ho, and so that's how that happened. So that Red Dragonfly is a series, pretty much, of folk songs from all over the world, Brazil, Japan, like I said.
Really amazing. I mean, that the Penderecki Quartet is
yeah,
and you did win
incredible.
An award or a nomination for Contemporary Jazz Album of the Year, I think, on that one.
Yeah, we didn't win, but we got
But you were nominated. But it is definitely contemporary, and especially the string writing. Really, really interesting.
Thank you.
Of course, this one, well, now, of course, what
That's
has happened.
That's a party record.
Yes, but what has happened now, you know, with when you hear Guantanamo, you know, what the visions that are conjured up are certainly not of music, but this is really an amazing album. Each track is so different from the previous one, even though you reflect back. The one about the Guantanamo Blues is really out of this world.
Well, that was written in Cuba, actually in Guantanamo, and it was quite an experience being there. Guantanamo, the city of Guantanamo is almost like a Pleasantville. You know, it was one of the most prosperous cities in Cuba, before the naval base, before the embargo. But when the base was cut off, the harbor was cut off, everything sort of shut down in Guantanamo, and the city really went into a bit of a depression. We called this record Radio Guantanamo was because every day we could pick up the radio station on the naval base, from where we were, from where we were working on the music. And it was really, it was quite unusual to be working on this music. One of the things was we were working with the Changui music.
What is Changui?
Well, Changui is the most indigenous music of Cuba. It's the original music. They're sort of the foundation of this particular recording there on many of the cuts. And it was fun because we mixed it up with New Orleans musician Johnny Sansong, who was on harmonica and accordion and some guitar. And then we also had the late, great Dewey Redman on it. And Howard Johnson, and then a number of other Cuban musicians. Tiburon from Santiago was singing on some of the cuts. Pedrito Martinez is on congas, and he's pretty world renowned. He won the Thelonious Monk competition a couple years ago. So who else do I miss? I got Osmani Jr., Pedrito. We have Richie Bachet, who's just a stellar jazz drummer, and he plays Cuban music wonderfully. And he's been playing with Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock, young drummer, really just exceptional talent. And Larry and myself, right? That's a group.
Terrific. Well, we look forward to seeing you and to hearing you.
I've been told the Kimmel Center's just the most gorgeous.
It is gorgeous.
Beautiful sound, so I'm really looking forward to it.
It's really great, and you're going to have a huge audience, I'm sure.
Well, thank you so much, Jill.
A pleasure speaking with you, Jane. Look forward to meeting you.
Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.